Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
If you lost Survivor and you're feeling down, David and Jessica will turn it around. They'll break down the rules and they'll show you how. You played yourself and got voted out. This is why Blank lost. And this is why Blank lost. Ooh, baby, this is why Blank lost.
Welcome back to another special edition of Why Blank Lost, as we continue our series of Why Blank Won podcasts in parallel with the RHAP Survivor Season Rankings. I'm David Bloomberg, and joining me on this journey is, of course, my co-host Jessica Lewis.
Hello, everyone, and thank you again for joining us as we are traveling through time and watching some darker seasons of Survivor, right? Isn't that where this one fits in? I do believe it was the dark ages.
The winter is light, but the rest of it, yeah, there's a lot of dark there. So, yeah. I know it's been a little while since our last episode. So, hey, remember us, mm-hmm. When we discussed how the heck Fabio won. But since that point, there have been a number of seasons just in the way the ranking fell out that we, or at least I and Rob, already covered in podcasts. And then I had some difficulties with the CBS All Access switch to Paramount Plus. Their technical support, and I use that term very loosely, never did get everything fixed for me. My son had to figure it out.
That's a problem.
So that's where I'm going to send my next check. You know, instead of paying Paramount Plus, I'm just going to pay my son.
Perfect.
Now, you mentioned, some darkness, and as we discussed last time, we're concentrating on two groups of winners for these podcasts. Those who make us wonder how they won, which was last time, not last week, and those who did such a good job that we think it's worth discussing them. Sophie falls into the latter category. She was one of my favorite winners, and of course, as you know, Jessica, she was my pick to take top prize in Winners at War.
She was. And I thought that was a great pick. She's a little sleuthy. And I was a little jealous of your pick, I will say. I was definitely jealous.
Yeah. And just so you know, by the way, Sophie is not the only strategic game player in her household, because her husband won the Settlers of Catan Quarren tournament set up by Michelle Fitzgerald and came close to the first one. In fact, I played against him both times and he just kept on beating me, even though I knew what his strategy was.
That's amazing. Well, I have a sneaking suspicion that the two of them together probably feed off of each other very well, because she is so strategic and just in everything she does. I love Sophie because it does seem very calculated. So this is going to be a fun podcast for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's good. It's good that you, brought us away, because we are not here to discuss why David lost Settlers of Catan to Sophie's husband. We're actually, of course, going to talk about why Sophie won. And we'll do that following the same path as we always do during a normal Survivor season, if we even remember what a normal Survivor season is.
That's true.
Which is comparing how she played to the rules I originally wrote way back after season one. As happened last time, and I'd say that it can often end up this way, Sophie's win is intricately linked to the losses of Coach and Albert. So they will definitely both come up in this conversation as well. Mm-hmm. Anyone who would like to refamiliarize themselves with the rules can check out the most recent version at robhasawebsite.com/blog/survivor rules. Or you can get the shorter and much more colorful version of the rules in poster form. You show your poster there. You can see part of
Here's
my poster.
Mine.
Yes.
Oh, look at that.
And that is at tinyurl.com/davidrulesposter2.
Yes. And you should definitely order. And I do appreciate those who have been ordering. I am the shipping department, so I will gladly work with you if you happen to live outside of the United States. And if you're interested in ordering, just DM me. My Twitter handle is here. I almost had it, and we can work that out for you.
Oh, hey, I just noticed my Twitter handle magically changed to my name. I have no idea how that happened.
It did, didn't it?
Mm. Yes. So in addition to the poster, we also have another way to get the rules so you can always have them with you, and that is in T-shirt form.
That's right.
Just go to robhasawebsite.com or robhasapodcast.com and click the merch link near the top. That will take you to a newer, larger RHAP shop than there was before, and you can scroll through to find not just the design I showed you, but another new design, too. Yes. So... and there, like I said, there's the classic poster design that I just showed and the checklist design that Jessica showed. And you can get the checklist on a mug, too.
Yes. You can put it on everything in your house.
Yes,
you can wear
exactly.
it, you can hang it up, and you can drink out of it. See, you'll never forget how to play Survivor.
That's right. So anyway, with that said, and before we get to Sophie in particular, there are a few things I wanted to mention about this season, and I'm sure you did, too.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start at the very, very beginning, because I don't know if you noticed this.
Let's start at the very beginning.
I thought I was the one who sings on this podcast. but you sing much better. So now, I don't know if you noticed, but when Jeff Probst was giving his opening spiel, he said, "In the end, only one will remain to claim the $1 million prize."
Yes, I did. And the camera went immediately to Sophie's face.
Yes. But he said, "One will remain." Zoom in on Sophie.
Uh-huh. I totally caught that. I was like, well, that's kind of a giveaway.
It is when you know.
Right. And that's true. But I do. They do that a lot when it's after the tribal, like after immunity challenges. And then if anyone's been being discussed, they'll always put the camera on that person, like, one person's going to be leaving us tonight, and then they'll show various people. Yeah. So I was like, interesting. Interesting shot choice there.
Yes. Yes. So all these things, in, like I said, in retrospect, you see and you're like, oh, yeah. How did I miss that?
Right.
So when getting into the game, one topic we absolutely have to discuss is whether or not Cochran should have gone to rocks at the merge. And there are two reasons for this. One, because if he had, it could have changed the whole game, and we potentially would have been talking about a different winner, or at least a different final three. Indeed, there's a discussion about this very topic already going on right now in the patron Facebook group. The second reason is because you went to rocks.
Didn't I?
Yeah. And ended up, unfortunately, suffering the exact fate that Cochran feared more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
I discussed in Why Jessica Lost at the time, why you made the right move, and we've covered it a bit since then. So in short, for anyone who doesn't remember, Jessica was in a situation where flipping would have put her in immediate danger of being voted out quickly, and holding fast to her alliance was worth the risk. That is the very, very short version of a much longer podcast.
I like that shortened version. That's good.
Yes. Now, Cochran was in a different position. Flipping would not have, and obviously did not, get him voted out right away. And he believed he had a chance to move up the ladder because, as we saw in a secret scene, he was promised a Final Four deal with Albert, Sophie, and Coach. He was wrong, mind you.
Right.
But he didn't know that, and he told me in an interview that he figured they'd want to take him to the end because he pissed off half the jury. Plus Ozzy and particularly Keith basically caused the flip through the way Cochran was treated. So you've got that. Now, on the other side, you look at the very good mathematical reasons why he shouldn't have flipped. Four of the six on his side would have been safe from a rock draw versus only one person on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, two of the people on his side won immunity. One had the idol. One was the target.
Right.
On the other side, you just had the one target. So from a tribal standpoint, he was in good shape. But he still had a 14% chance of being voted out, which obviously, you know, worried him more than anything. He didn't care about the fact that it was, oh, I have only a 2 in 7 chance of someone on this tribe.
Mm-hmm.
It's the 14% chance that it could be him that was the issue. The other thing is, if he had gone through and survived it, it looked like he had Dawn and Jim, who at least ostensibly wanted to work with him.
Yes.
But even those two talked about voting him out after the rope clipping debacle in the Jack and Jill challenge, which, by the way, he told me it wasn't his fault, despite what we saw. So take that for what it's worth.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was firmly on his side for flipping during my original watch. I went back, looked at my original articles and everything. As I was rewatching, I wavered. I was like, ooh, I think I was wrong about that. But then I reviewed my interview with him and was reminded about some of these things that I just mentioned. Another thing he told me was I wasn't in a good position to win either way. Staying in my old tribe, I had about a 1% chance. With flipping, I thought I had about a 10% chance. Getting to the end, some Upolu members would have to betray their own, and I might be able to lock up some Upolu votes. Then he said, I may be delusional, but I think there's a chance Dawn and even Ozzy would vote for me to win if I made it to the finals. It's mm-hmm. a tough call. So, you know, that's all of my thoughts.
I can give you mine.
Yes, please do.
He should not have flipped. And the reason Ooh. I say that is because there was such a divide amongst the tribes, even though I understand he's coming from a group of people that haven't necessarily treated him that wonderfully. And he also has a personality that was rubbing some people the wrong way on his tribe. But at least he had some inroads there. He had some relationships with people that he could have utilized and would have garnered favor if he had stood strong. Because everything that had transpired for him up to that point, yes, they were considering voting him out, but Ozzy went to Redemption Island to kind of save the group, right? And then Cochran, by doing what he did, completely turned his back on that group. So you can assure yourself, even if you make it to the end, if any of those people are sitting on the jury, they are not voting for Cochran. Not going to happen, because they were so angry with him for betraying the tribe, he's lost every single jury vote. So if you want to win the game, you have to make sure that the people who are sitting over there are going to pick you to win. And if he had not flipped, he then would have been much more likely to have received votes in the end from his own tribe mates if he had made it. And the other thing that I think is a very interesting point is how firm Upolu was in their presenting themselves as a family. It was no secret that they were strong, family-oriented group, like, this is it, this is our tribe. And to think for one second that he would have been able to integrate himself into that goes against everything we saw during the rewatch that I noticed. But it wasn't like Upolu just represented it to each other. They made Jeff aware of it. They talked about it at the immunity challenges. It was all over the place. They would pray together. It was very, very clear that they were a solid core group. So I don't think that he made the right choice, because there were so many other factors that he needed to consider. And trust me when I say, if there's no love for you on the other side, you don't want to go to the other side. And he, by going to the other side, didn't gain the love he hoped, and he certainly lost all the love he had over here. And at that point, you are 100% losing the game, regardless of where you end up. If you do end up in the final three, you're not winning. So in my mind, if you want to win this game, going to Rocks was the way to do it, because then at least you could sit in a final three and say, listen, I stood strong with my group. And you're all sitting there And, you know, we were a tribe of one as opposed to a tribe of Cochrane, which is how they all felt about it.
Now, are you sure you're not just saying this so that you would add to your little club of people who got rocked out?
No, I'm actually not, because here's the thing. Going to rocks is not something that I would stress that people should do when they play Survivor. It is horrifying. It's awful. I certainly didn't like that my game was decided by a rock, but I wanted to win the game. And I knew if I flip, I'm losing the game. So I've essentially come here for nothing. So either I play the odds and I hope for not the black rock, and then I stay in the game, or I flip and then I lose anyway. So it's one of those, you really have to read the room and you have to know what your odds are at that moment. And that's what it comes down to. And he did not read the room. And I will say this too. He did actually meet me at my final finale, the reunion show. He mm-hmm. was in the back when we walked out. And when he saw me, I thought it was kind of funny. He's like, "There's the girl that did what I couldn't do." I was one of, you know, six that did what you couldn't do. But it was at least funny that he saw that, you know, here's someone who did go to rocks. And yeah, and I was the one that got rocked out. And again, I've said it before, I don't regret the decision. I mean, I picked the wrong rock and that's terrible. But I do think that it really does depend on the circumstances. And if mm-hmm. that if you are so divided, which our tribes, we were so divided at that moment. There was a line in the sand and I had no love on the other side. And I knew that. So that was something that he really needed to consider. They were so divided that he just completely lost any potential jury votes from his old tribe by doing that.
Yeah, I think it was. I mean, I think it was a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation in his mm-hmm. case, more than it was in yours. I think he was there probably for the experience as much as to win.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to extend that experience.
Right.
And he thought he had a slightly better chance by flipping. There is one other thing about the move we haven't mentioned, and I know that several people in the patron group have already mentioned it, but it was in my notes already. And we normally don't consider it when we're talking about why someone lost. But in this case, we're not talking about why he lost. We're just chatting. If he doesn't flip, I wonder if he's brought back for a second season. If he goes to rocks, he doesn't become the bigger personality. He just becomes the guy in the, I mean, let's presume for the moment that the odds work out in his favor. They pagong the other tribe and then they get rid of him and he's done nothing spectacular.
Yeah, but his personality, Jeff loved, and you could see that. So I'm yeah. curious if that would have been enough to carry him, yeah. to bring him back. I don't know.
So
he's a likable guy.
He is. Anyway, speaking of likable guys, we're going to move to a player who has returned multiple times. Now, despite him being likable, I have said before, and I will say again, Ozzy cannot win Survivor.
Damn near close this time.
Well, hold on. I have occasionally gotten criticism by people pointing to this season and saying what you just said. And that's true. But that was on this particular season that was basically set up for him to be able to win.
Oh, for sure.
You know, it's like, hey, let's put Ozzy in something that's based totally on challenges.
And not puzzles. Not puzzles.
Yeah, mostly. He was voted out three times.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, one of those was on purpose, but still.
Yeah.
And if you point to him, well, he only lost that one challenge. It's also fair to point to the couple of Redemption Island challenges that he just barely won.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, a ball rolls slightly different way for Cochrane in that maze that they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of having a story about Ozzy winning everything, we have a huge redemption story for Cochrane.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, maybe it was camera tricks, maybe not, but it sure looked like that was damn close.
Right. Yeah. Well, this is not the first time that Survivor has done this, right? Where there's, or this is not the only time, you know, where they create a season in order to essentially allow a particular
person
to maybe win. I don't to call me crazy, but yeah, no. And I do understand that there is, there's a lot that comes with Ozzy when he plays Survivor. He brings to the table so many qualities that a lot of people don't have. The fishing, the survival components, the climbing the trees. Very, very impressive. I mean, he really is. If there was just a true you need to survive on an island kind of game, he is winning that over and over again. But there are certain components of Ozzy that I think end up rubbing people the wrong way while he's playing the game with them, because he is very sure of himself. And he sometimes presents himself as overconfident and almost a little condescending to the people he's speaking to, like we saw with Cochran. So that's some risk that he has when he plays this game, is presenting himself. And if he's so great at that survival component, he needs to balance out being better at the social component, which I think he ends up forgetting about because he's so wrapped up in I'm feeding them, I'm taking care of them, they will respect me for that. And that's true. But when you're mean to people, or if you say things to people that make them feel like less about themselves, then that can have a negative impact on the end result of your game.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, he has so many different aspects that he brings to the game. One of them that he doesn't bring is strategy. You know, he was in his element when, as he said, I will welcome you into Redemption Island. I will feed you fish. And then I will say goodbye to you as I beat you in a challenge, you know. But every season that he has returned, he said to me in multiple interviews when I was interviewing him that when he got out there, he was going to focus more on strategy. I mean, the quote that he gave me a couple times, I'm going to focus less on fishing and more on strategy. And then he gets out there and boom, he becomes Ozzy. It's kind of like when you're driving home from work and suddenly you're home and you don't remember how you got there because you just go into automatic drive.
Right. I'd love to see him in like a Survivor Africa kind of setting. Like, could he do as well if he's not fishing?
Yeah, I mean, that's true. So, I mean, he even made fun of Jim for strategizing, if you remember that, you know, he's not going to change.
Yeah.
I should add, because you said this already, I guess he could in a game where it's just out there doing challenges and surviving. If they did I hesitate to even say this, they bring back that horrible Edge of Extinction. I could see him winning that.
Yeah, for sure.
Because he will go out there. He will live by himself. He will do everything and he'll feed the whole jury. And then he'll get back in and they'll all be like, oh, he did such a great job. And they'll give it to him.
Yeah. But so that's not going to happen again.
Exactly. So there's one more player that I don't really want to talk about, but I think we need to talk about. And that would be Brandon. First. Well, you know what? Mainly, we don't need to go into all of the insanity that is Brandon. The main thing I want to point out is that everyone brings up our friend Eric Reichenbach, who, by the way, artist of the poster.
Yes. Thank you, Eric.
Everybody brings up time and time again, him giving up the immunity necklace and getting voted out. Brandon did the same thing for a worse reason.
Yeah.
Which made it a dumber move.
Yeah, but you know why people don't bring it up?
Because they're afraid of him and he's nuts?
He might come to their house and dump all their food out and it could be scary. No, Brandon, here's what I'll say about Brandon. As far as what we saw in the game, I do think that Brandon really tried to go out there for a larger purpose. We saw Jeff say it time and time again. It was like he had the weight of the world on his shoulders. And he really was trying to correct a family name, which has got to be a lot. He's 19. I did not know that he was 19 when he played this game. I just found that out in doing some rewatches of things and reading articles. No idea he was 19. So talk about a lot of pressure on a young kid who has seen how the world has responded to his uncle. And he's got to go out there and initially is like, I'm not going to tell anybody. I'm not going to let them know who I am, which really obviously was a struggle for him in relationship to his religious beliefs. And so it was almost like this perfect storm for him where he had so much that he needed to prove of himself, but it was so conflicting with his ideals and things that he wanted. And this game is not a game that you can have certain desires when you're playing. There's certain things you just can't walk in. You can't say, I'm never going to lie, because you're probably going to have to. You have to have some.
We might hear that come up again in, you know, throughout the rest of the podcast, right. By the way.
So there are certain things that you do need to talk to yourself about. And if your religious beliefs are so strong that it will hold you back from doing certain things in the game, that's your choice. But for Brandon, it was a very, very big struggle. And I think that all of that just culminated into the Brandon that we saw. And he was very desirous of being this like child of God, but he was also trying to play this game that doesn't really let you do that. And then on top of it, he's a Hans. And so many, and he's playing with someone who played with his uncle. And so there's all of these things that are festering there. And I think for Brandon, it was just too much. And unfortunately,
it was really too much. The return season.
Yes.
Which we did not cover, but which was covered by Rob already. I have so much more that I could say about Brandon, but I'm not going to. Some of it gets a little too close to real world events of the past couple weeks.
Yes.
You know, some of the way he interacted with Michaela and some of the things he said. So I'm, you know, here, this is not the place to go into that, but
no.
It was somewhat scary to see that again, mm-hmm. and realize what it could end up with.
But, for sure.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, yeah, I think we've said all we need to say about Brandon for now.
Lots of demons.
Yeah. And, you know, really, there's a whole lot more I'd love to discuss about the season. Like, don't get me started on the hypocrisy of Whitney attacking Cochran's character during the show, considering the way she behaved. I'll just leave that the way she behaved. But yeah, we've got plenty to talk about with Sophie along with Coach and Albert. Is there anything else about the season that I've missed that you want to discuss?
Yes. We need to talk about one other thing.
Okay. It's not Brandon.
It's not, but okay. There was definitely not 16 people on this season of Survivor. There were 17 people. And I just want to throw that out there.
God?
Yes! God was, he was making so many choices out there. It was crazy. The amount of times that God was the final deciding factor in what was going to happen, who was getting voted out, who was going to find an idol, who was going to win immunity. So thank you, God, for joining this season.
Yeah, who knew he had so much time on his hands?
Right? I was fascinated.
There's also the thing that just because you hear a voice in your head does not mean it is God.
But if you're certain people playing this particular season, it was yeah. definitely God's voice.
Yeah.
So that's the yeah. other added component.
Yeah. God, I mean, Jeff. So, yeah. I know yeah. it was Lord, I mean Jeff, but same thing. All right. So with that behind us or above us or whatever,
right. we'll ask God. God, are we good to go? Okay, we're good to go.
Yes. Yes. I have one name. One name came to me. and that name is Sophie. Because yes. Sophie went to play Survivor and she found herself in a tribe that valued honesty, loyalty, and integrity. Or so they said.
Mm-hmm.
She found a way to work within that system and to get to the end while shutting down anybody else's ideas of rebellion. She played a quiet game that was overshadowed on TV by Coach and God, who is the opposite of quiet. But as we've discussed before, often the best games are those played in the shadows, not highlighted by big television moments.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed, we heard a lot about honor, loyalty, and integrity. And anytime I say that during the rest of the podcast, you can just imagine air quotes around that.
Oh, no, I'm going to think about A Few Good Men every time.
Oh,
you speak
okay.
of honor, code, and loyalty. That's all I think of every time. Like, that is A Few Good Men. That is Jack Nicholson sitting there on the stand. Anyway, I digress.
That would be good to clip into the, put to drop those clips in.
It would be it's so on point. It's so on point. Somebody do that, because I'm not good at that kind of stuff.
Right. Yeah, us either. Anyway, we heard a lot about that this season from people who did not win, but we didn't hear about it from Sophie.
Mm-hmm.
And you also won't find those concepts in my rules, any version. Now that we've done a full South Pacific rewatch, and I've gone back over my older articles and my interviews from the original airing, it's time to take a new look at why Sophie won. The first rule, and most important rule, says to scheme and plot. And I would say that all three of our finalists succeeded here. Sophie noted in her interview with me that she specifically sought out somebody of like mind to plan strategy, and she found Albert. The two of them and Coach aligned very early as a sub-trio within the Upolu Five. And, of course, those five were themselves a demonstration of an important part of this rule, which says that players need to make alliances right away. The final five came together right off the bat, mostly because they were on the beach together.
Mm-hmm.
Edna made the terrible mistake of not being there at that moment, and it haunted her the rest of the game. As she said on the show, your early moves have implications later on. And her move was being in the shelter.
Laundry.
Her move at the time, instead of being with the five, was she was in the shelter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And by the time she wandered over by them, that meeting had broken up.
Mm-hmm.
The final three, especially Sophie, ensured that they all stuck together. I was constantly assessing the game, and it turned out that every minute I was thinking about the game, I decided the best move was to stick with my alliance. It seemed like I wasn't doing anything, but I was. I think keeping together an alliance from day one took a lot of hard work. I had a final three agreement with Rick. Edna had a promise from me that we were in the final three. There were a lot of inner alliances, and keeping everybody calm was difficult. I wanted everybody to be happy and calm and comfortable. In a game where there's already so much paranoia, that's difficult to do. I think you saw a lot with Albert. I was constantly dissuading him from switching or making any kind of move. That was my game plan, to make people relax. And as Ozzy said in his post-game interview, she played a great strategic game. Albert and Sophie were smart to use Coach as a shield. Sophie made a lot of strategic decisions, and she kept things from falling apart.
Yeah, I do think that the ability that she had to really control both Coach and Albert was so fascinating because she controlled them in different ways. She understood what was significant to Coach, and she honed in on that, and she allowed him his platform to present himself to the tribe and to really kind of run the show. He was an incredible sidekick for her because it did allow her to play an under the radar game and strategize with Albert and then let Coach kind of be the presenter of these ideas. I mean, Coach was very clear that I'm not the one making the decisions. We're all making them together. And and God, exactly. So I do think that it helped that it's almost like that you start the whispers and everybody starts to kind of talk, but then Coach would have an opportunity to present it. But it seemed like it was a group decision when in reality it was Albert and Sophie kind of pushing things in that direction, which is it's a really hard thing to pull off. And also, I think to her benefit, this just happened to be a season with a lot of really strong characters and really strong personalities. That I think there was, this is just my opinion, there was probably less pushback from, I don't know, production about like, this is going to be boring because there's just like one group of people who are going to kind of pagong everyone. And we don't really like that because really with someone like Brandon and Coach and Ozzy, and I mean, you had so many dynamic personalities that in Cochran that I think they were like, great, let's just see how this plays out. And I think it actually made the season that much more interesting because people were so set in their groups. And I think it was fascinating that Sophie was so well, such a good read and understanding that I need to just back off and not try to overshadow and not tell coach, don't do that. I'm going to let him go. I'm going to let him do what he wants. And then I'm going to just rain down on him in the final three. So I thought it's a great strategy.
And, you know, a big part of keeping everyone calm was knowing that she had a clear path to the end, because she told me there was no way to know what would happen if she had followed Albert's suggestion and switched things up. And she felt she had no chance of winning against Dawn or Whitney. She said she knew she could keep, and this is what I mean by the clear path. She knew she could keep six people feeling comfortable. She knew once they got down to six, five would vote out Edna. At the five, she knew Coach and Rick were in her back pocket and they'd vote out Brandon. And she said, she told me, I know it's cliche, but I had this onion alliance where I was at the center of it. I saw it as a better plan not to disrupt the onion, but to make sure the people I would go up against at the end were people I could beat.
Yes, and that's the key component for an alliance, is you have to know that every single person in the alliance is 100% committed to that alliance. And this is coming from someone who, I voted one of my alliance members out, but it was because, I know, it was because there was a very clear division within the alliance, and I was told point blank, if it's, you know, if I got to go this way, see you later. So when you understand there is a pecking order and you understand that you're not as significant as the other people in your alliance, that's when you need to reconfigure where you're at. Like someone like Edna, that's someone who should have been able to look at it and go, boy, I was told I'm number six. I really need to do something because I'm going to be out six. And she just wasn't able to ever do anything with that. Whereas someone like Sophie, she was sitting pretty because she was right in the center. So it makes sense for her to not disrupt things. So that pecking order really does become significant when you are in a six person alliance and you know.
Right.
How you
and her ability to keep it. Now, this was something that Albert even pointed out in an interview with Mike Bloom during Winners at War. So if you remember, Mike Bloom for Parade interviewed people who had played with the winners prior. And so he interviewed Albert. And Albert talked about Sophie serving as the cooler head in their alliance and, quote, making sure they looked ahead to their position at the end rather than a flashy move at the moment. Of course, we saw that strategy carry over to Winners at War. And as I said, during our very sad Why Sophie Lost podcast for that season, you know, I'm always in favor of someone who isn't just looking for a flashy move.
Right. Yeah. And Sophie is the epitome of that. She understands the nuances of the game. And it clearly showed in how she maneuvered her way all the way to the end.
Yeah.
From day one.
Now, she wasn't alone in thinking she was in control of the game through scheming and plotting. All of the final three believed it. Coach said in his interview, did Albert think he was in control of the game? Yeah. Did I? Yeah. Did Sophie? Absolutely. We all carried each other. It was a mutually benefiting alliance. All three of us helped each other. Now, obviously, Sophie benefited the most, but Albert and Coach did fairly well in this area, too. Albert told me that he went into the final three with people who played the best game other than himself. He said, every move I made, every word I said, there was a reason behind it. I almost wanted to say, I'll be watching you. He said, if there's not a reason, you're not playing the game properly. So he planned ahead of time to get everybody on his tribe to think it was an us versus them situation. But it worked too well. He said, our tribe was so tight, so close that nobody wanted to make a move. I walked myself into a corner. All the players in my alliance, nobody wanted to move, which, of course, was exactly what Sophie wanted. You know, she said on the show that Albert thought he had a great strategic mind, but never came up with one good plan. He kept wanting to go against the five too early and make a big move just to make a big move. And so, again, considering my position on big moves, is it any wonder that, again, I like Sophie's game so much?
Right. Yeah. And I do think that a lot of it can be credited to, I know that people have referred to it as like Coach's cult, and I don't want to speak ill of Coach.
You're going to say you don't want to speak ill of
the energy. No, like Coach is such a dynamic individual and just brings such an energy that you don't really find in very many people. And I really think that she lucked out by ending up with Coach, because he really has this ability to just bring people together and make it feel right. Like it's very interesting to watch him kind of work a room and work the space with these individuals, and how he was able to make them all feel like they were his best friend and that they were all going to the end with him. So I do think that it was to her credit that she picked up on that so easily. I mean, even though she referred to him as a little girl or in the final tribal, but she recognized that about Coach, that his personality is going to help with this idea of bringing together an alliance. And then she kind of let him run with it. So I think that without Coach, it would have been much harder for her to pull this off, because he's just such a force. And then the religious component, I think.
I mean,
really,
she wouldn't have been able to pull it off this way. I think we'll get to that more in the third rule.
Right.
Yeah, well, I'll just leave it at that, because, yeah, Coach was no dummy in the season. You know, at the merge, Ozzy and Cochran were trying to fool Coach's tribe into thinking Cochran was a turncoat before Cochran actually became a turncoat. And Coach looked at this and he called out the plan to Ozzy. He said, "Here's what I think you're doing."
Right.
And he was dead on right. Then he worked to get to that final three. He made promises. He broke those promises when necessary. He might not like to admit it, but he schemed and plotted.
Absolutely, yes. And his personality being so dynamic really helped bring those people along with him, and helped Sophie and helped Albert. So I do want to credit his game, because I do think that he did well. But I think for someone like Coach, because there was this religious component that was being associated to his,
I think you're about to go where I'm about to go here.
Are we going to?
Okay.
All right. Then should I keep talking?
Let me just make it official.
Official,
because the final three, they all schemed and plotted together. Obviously, only one can win. So if they did everything together, there must have been other factors that came into play. One of those was the second rule, which says not to scheme and plot too much and keep your scheming secret. Take it away, Jessica.
Okay, so religion. I do think that Edna hit the nail on the head with this particular component when she was talking at the final tribal and how people had been duped, because one of the most known mechanisms to manipulate individuals throughout history is religion. And not that Coach wanted to manipulate anyone by utilizing religion, but this is what I think happened. I think Coach is someone who is a religious individual, and he does want to play with honor and integrity. And I know he struggled with it, and he talked about that a lot, that this was a struggle for him. But there is something almost icky, I think, for people on the receiving end, when you start attaching religion to what you are doing and the reason why you're doing things, and you voted out particular people because God told you to. Like, I do think that it affects people much differently than if you just own it and say, "This is what I did for my game." It's different when you are attaching religion to it, because people have such a visceral response to religion if they are truly a religious person, like Brendan, who is very religious, and or like Dawn, who is also a very religious individual. And so I think, and Rick as well. Rick was very frustrated with that component. So I think you end up suffering the consequences much more harshly than someone like Sophie, who attached herself to it. But you end up looking hypocritical if you are the person who is preaching it, as opposed to the person who is just receiving it.
Preach on, Jessica. Yeah,
I'm preaching.
Yeah,
so
I mean, you're right.
It
wasn't just backstabbing. And, so Sophie said in her post-game interview that Coach's major problem with strategy was that no survivor has ever not broken a promise and really played a loyal game. She said, "You have to backstab people, vote them out, and convince them to give you the money." He finally managed, with the help of some people, to play a semi-strategic game. The downfall is he doesn't want to admit he was disloyal. And when she was asked if he was making promises when he doesn't have to, she said she thought Coach was really well-meaning, but it's hard to believe a lot of what he says. Quote, I still don't understand Coach. I need a psychiatrist to explain him to me. He likes to make huge promises and huge statements and grandiose moves without always thinking about the repercussion. And that continues into what you were just saying. It wasn't just his backstabbing and not thinking about what would happen. It was the way he went about it, both when he was when it was mm-hmm. happening and then discussing it later in final tribal council. It's difficult to preach honor and loyalty while also playing survivor the way it should be played. But Coach might have been able to overcome it if he had just been, well, honest at the end. Now, we'll go over the final mm-hmm. tribal council aspect of things when we get to Appendix B. We have a little while to wait for that. But for now, we can definitely say that the it wasn't the backstabbing that was necessarily the issue. It was doing it while simultaneously claiming not to have done so. And, as you said, using religion to manipulate people. Now, Coach denied it in his interviews, but other players weren't buying it. When Brandon was asked in interviews if Coach used religion to manipulate him, he replied, did you watch the show? And then he added that Coach went too far with religion. Meanwhile, he said, I realized that Sophie, she never played the religion card. She really didn't lie to me because we really didn't talk at all. Coach and Albert really lied to me.
And I will give her credit. I know I'm going to jump ahead to the final tribal, but I think it does fit in here. Because you could see it on Brandon's face when she talked about the idol and how it was actually found. And it brought me back to the episode when they were all praying about trying to find the idol. And she was giving a confessional and then kind of a voiceover how interesting it was that Coach is leading this prayer to find the idol when Coach actually has the idol in his pocket. And when she presented that at the final tribal, I think it really set off a lot of. It was like very unhappy. Like Brandon's face was his jaw almost hit the floor because, again, you are tying it back to something that is so it's so deep for some people. And to have him do that and then they hear about it, that it was actually just a big ruse. And he was utilizing the Lord to bring about this idol that he actually already had. I think for someone like Brandon right there, he was already frustrated with Coach. And in that moment,
I have the quote somewhere else in my rules. I'm not going to look for or in my notes. Coach actually denied it in interviews. He said, I wasn't praying for that. If you go back and watch, you'll see I was praying for success in the challenge. No, Coach, we did go back and watch. That's not at all what happened. Now, we have talked a lot about Coach's problems, but he wasn't the only person in the final three to have issues. Albert got caught with his fake juror ass kissing, which ended up being seen as overly sneaky. Watching him reminded me of the last podcast we did where Sash thought that he was buttering up the jurors, but he was so transparent that it pissed them off instead.
Right. Yeah. And I do think that the used car salesman was something that really hit home. I think Albert does come across as a very likable guy, but he's also someone that was very not like Sophie in his presentation of him playing the game, where Sophie presented herself as we'll probably talk about. People thought she was a spoiled brat. So it's a different way that people perceive you. Right. And perception is reality. We've talked about that so many times. And if they're listening to Albert talk to them and they're getting the sense from him that he's just trying to sell me a bill of goods right now, he's just looking for my vote, then that is going to rub them the wrong way and they're not going to feel good about it. Where someone like Sophie, they might just think, well, that's just her personality. She's just a spoiled brat and that's just the way she is. It's a different response based upon the presentation by that person. And Albert tried, but it just didn't sit well with people at all.
He ended up looking like he was scheming and plotting too much, which he was. You know, as for Sophie, we've already discussed it a bit. She didn't have a problem here. She backstabbed plenty, but, you know, she had those multiple final three deals. She had all the same stuff, but she did it in a way that didn't piss people off because they knew it was about the game.
Except Rick.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Rick.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right. So the third rule talks about being flexible. How do you think Sophie did here with the hint that I already gave you earlier?
Well, see, what's interesting is, like, I feel like she's a mixed bag, right? Because she didn't have to be flexible because she found herself, as you said, the center of the onion is what she called herself. So she really could kind of sit back and be in a comfortable space with her alliance and didn't necessarily need to move from that plan because it was working so exceptionally well and everyone was buying into it. So I think she would have been flexible should she, if she had to be, if there was something in the game. Because I do think that we saw her responding to various things. She was having those discussions with Albert, kind of playing through the possibilities and then realizing, no, this is still the best result is over here. I'll consider it and then we'll talk about it. And then I'm coming back because this is what's going to work best. So I think she would have been flexible if she needed to be, but she was in
so
a great position.
What you said is basically what I said in my original Why Sophie Won article that I wrote. Okay.
Look, you're teaching me so well.
Yeah, I said what I said was flexibility would have been overrated for her. But when I rewatched it, I changed my mind. Because, yes, at first glance or at second glance or however many times you've watched it, it may seem like, she... You know, in some ways, it may seem like she violated the rule because it says in the big, bold, red highlighted letters, you cannot simply tie yourself to one alliance and hope that it survives. But.
Right.
Even though she was the one who held together the tribal alliance, that's what she did. She was holding it. She made it survive. She didn't just hope it survived. So that's why that part doesn't apply to her. The rule also says you need to have a backup alliance or side alliances or more than one. And we discussed how she had that. So she was flexible in that regard. Mm-hmm. Another part of the rule says that players need to have their finger on the pulse of every member of the tribe. And those are the exact words Sophie used at the reunion to describe what she was doing from the beginning. She even told me, I definitely felt like all the time I knew what was going on and nothing ever happened that I didn't want to happen. I always felt in control of the game. Matter of fact, I think that was one of those was the title of the article, you know, my interview article that I posted with her. You know, I knew what was going on all the time. She added that she sussed people out and worked within the framework she had. So this was what I referred to earlier. You know, she found herself in this situation and she told me, I think I had a lot of influence over Coach that wasn't shown on TV. From day one or two, I recognized who I was playing with, knew Brandon and Rick and others were immovable and would be the most loyal allies in the game. That's huge to have people who would never flip on you. It's like Christmas came early, and I definitely utilized that. As you know, so then as for the rest of the framework she mentioned, she saw that the tribe had coalesced around, as you mentioned earlier, around the idea of religion and loyalty. So she used those. If the tribe, and this is where I said earlier, you know, I'll get to this. If the tribe had gone in a different direction, if she didn't have Coach, let's say she had Ozzy, you know, if the random draw had gone differently, I think she had the flexibility to go in a different direction as well. And I didn't necessarily recognize it at first. And it actually, I think it actually did help her.
Yeah, no, I think that she is so good at reading people and understanding what matters to that person that she's communicating with. Even though people said she wasn't great at the social component of her game, because I really think she was just studying people. When she was talking to people, it wasn't because I want to become friends. I mean, Brandon said it multiple times. I've two of my best friends I've now met on this island. She wasn't out there to make best friends. She was out there to win $1 million. And so every conversation she was having with people, it was like a studying session where I'm going to pay attention. I'm going to listen to what they're telling me and I'm going to take that information. I'm going to use it. So I kudos to her for being so good at that. And so I do think that, yeah, she would have made it work.
Now, one person who, you know, might have benefited from convincing others to be more flexible and mix things up was Albert. After all, he ended up with zero votes. But every time he tried, Sophie and Coach squashed his attempts. He could have tried to force the issue, but he would have needed really to completely cut ties with those two. And who knows where that would have left him. So he was kind of stuck.
Yeah. Well, but it would have been interesting if Albert had realized that maybe Coach and Sophie are so desirous of keeping this group together that that's bad for me. If he had read into it a little bit, that maybe this is going to be a problem for me. And
yeah,
sure
the thing
enough,
is, when could he have noticed? When could he have done? What move could he have made? There was no way Brandon was leaving. There was no way Rick was leaving. Edna wasn't leaving. I mean, there was no one for him to latch onto. Even when he tried to do it with Dawn and Whitney, there wasn't anybody he could do it with, really. Not enough people. Yeah.
That was it.
So. Moving to the fourth rule, it tells players not to let their emotions control them. I think all three finalists succeeded here because they had a plan and they stuck to it no matter what kind of emotional pleas their targets made. You know, we have plenty to say about Coach's decision to vote out Brandon. Sorry, maybe not Coach's decision, you know. But one thing is he did the right thing in terms of not letting emotion get in the way. And the same is true for all three of them when it came to people like Dawn or Cochran or even Edna, although, you know, they got annoyed with Edna. But, you know, they knew and they liked these players as people, but they were also smart enough to not let it interfere with their plans.
Yes. And I think if I'm remembering correctly, at one point, I'm pretty sure Sophie even said to Coach that he was being too emotional about something. And I was like, oh, that's interesting that she's even recognizing that. No, that's not how we're making this decision. And I do think that, again, it probably benefited her that she was playing this game with people that were more emotional. When you had someone like Edna who was feeling very left out and it was affecting her greatly. And you've got someone like Brandon who is also being affected on so many emotional levels. And I think that that worked in her favor by playing with people that were much more emotionally responsive to things as opposed to her gameplay.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing. There were emotions out there. And the whole premise of honor and loyalty and religion, all of that completely emotion based. But rather than falling for it, they used it to manipulate other people. Coach used it to manipulate other people, even if he wouldn't admit it.
Right, for sure.
All right, the fifth rule talks about the social game and reminds players they need to pretend to be nice. Albert was perhaps the smoothest of them all in this regard, or he thought he was. But that ended up being used against him in the end. He was so willing to entertain possible changes in strategy that I'm sure he expected some of the jurors to vote for him based on his apparent attempts to save them. But instead, they ended up viewing him as more of a snake who was trying to solicit their votes, which he was.
Mm, yes. Well, and that's not necessarily a bad thing if you are less car salesman-like about it.
Coach, I think he had a decent social game for much of the time, but playing nice didn't line up with his actions in the game. At the end, again, as we'll discuss more in Appendix B, he wouldn't admit that he had played anything but honorably. So he came off as a liar and a hypocrite. Much like with Albert, it ended up being a net negative.
And I will say with Coach, though, I've got to give him props for his ability to convince so many people that he was their number one. And I know we've talked a lot about the manipulation component and how this was utilized, but he never even had to play the idol that he had the entire time. He was never at day one. He thought they all wanted to get rid of him, and he managed to change that and really form relationships with people in what seemed to be deeper type of relationships than just a strategic relationship. So much so that it then frustrated people at the end. So I do think that he was really good at forming bonds, but unfortunately it clashed with his gameplay.
And then there was Sophie, who seemingly had the worst social game of the three, of the final three. You know, while the other two suffered from, this is a funny phrase, they suffered from having a better social game. Or more specifically being called out for pretending to be nice. So the rule says pretend to be nice, but when you're pretending to be nice, you have to be good at it. Actually benefited. She wasn't as outgoing or friendly with some of her tribe mates, so they didn't take it personally when she voted them out. I mentioned earlier, Brandon said flat out in his post-show interview that he couldn't say Sophie had directly lied to him because they didn't really talk. Now, normally we'd be like, oh, that's terrible she didn't really talk to him. But, you know, there's a difference between successfully pretending to be nice and failing at it. Sophie could have suffered consequences from this lacking, you know, and we saw some comments directed at her about it both before and during Final Tribal Council. But in the end, she won back some sympathy from the jury through her response to the attacks, maybe a few tears. And the majority decided it was worse to have thought somebody was a friend, you know, while they were stabbing you in the back, than it was to be voted out by somebody with whom they didn't have as much of a relationship.
Yes, she definitely benefited from having almost a coldness to her and not forming those really significant bonds and relationships with the people who were sitting on the jury, and then having an opportunity presented to her to explain it when she's being described as a spoiled brat. And she really took that to heart. And I think that they saw a side of Sophie they hadn't seen, which probably changed a lot of their ideas about her. But absolutely, 100%. I think it makes a huge difference if they don't feel like they've been duped by Sophie. And they didn't feel like they'd been duped by Sophie, but they definitely felt that way about Albert and Coach.
All right, moving on to the sixth rule. It warns against being too much of a threat. Of course, Ozzy overshadowed everyone in terms of being a challenge threat and a threat to win the whole game. But before Ozzy's return, Albert saw the possibility that Sophie could be a threat at the end, and he was right. He just wasn't able to do anything about it. And the funny thing is, if he had been able to do something about it, well, then Ozzy would have probably won the final challenge and Ozzy would have won instead. So Albert was, you know, kind of screwed no matter what. Now, Sophie, on the other hand, took proactive steps to reduce the threat posed by her allies. So, for example, she started going after Albert in earlier tribal councils, planting the seed that he was sneaky and sleazy. A seed that grew and blossomed in the juror's mind. And she became the new dragon slayer. She even got knighted for it. She actually called herself out in a tribal council, saying she was the only one who could beat Ozzy in a challenge. And then she did it. So mm-hmm. not only did she succeed in getting rid of a huge threat that way, she also earned his vote and probably others, as Ozzy told me that was part of his thinking, and he had to give her respect for that.
Right. And I think it's an interesting kind of situation, because the one thing you don't want to do in tribal council is call yourself a bigger threat, right? Like, you don't want to be shining a light in yourself. Like, I'm really good in challenges and I've won so many immunities. That's usually not a good thing. But when you've got Ozzy sitting next to you, well, then yes, you want to point out why she's better to keep around than Rick, because Rick hasn't won anything and she has, and somebody needs to beat Ozzy. He's the guy everyone's gunning for. So it definitely worked to her advantage to highlight that aspect of herself, as opposed to not wanting people to pay attention to it. Having Ozzy sitting next to her 100% to her benefit.
All right. The seventh rule covers dealing with idols and advantages. And here we have an atypical situation in that it wasn't an idol play that gave rise to any problems, but the idol find. And this gets to what you talked about earlier. Yes.
I was preaching.
Which was Coach finding the idol, keeping it a secret, and then Brandon spending so much time and energy looking for it. You know, Coach not telling him, praying, and then denying it. I guess it was an okay idea until Sophie told the whole story at Final Tribal Council. Yeah.
So beautiful. It was such a beautiful moment because she was just like, can I just clarify one thing?
Just want to drop this bomb on you.
So good.
And that's the thing. You know, yes, Coach, you trusted the people you were working with to do this, but if you were getting to the end, you know, did he not think they were ever going to use this against him? Maybe he didn't think about it. I don't know. And I do doubt that this one piece pushed anyone over the edge. But.
Well, I'm only curious.
Well, and he said in his post-game interview that it was a terrible feeling to find out that way. So he didn't specifically say, yes, this is what pushed me over the edge. But it was one more point that scored against him, added to everything else that we'll discuss in a few minutes in Appendix B.
And Sophie was part of that whole ploy. And who did they get mad at?
Well, because Sophie wasn't the one praying.
Why?
Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. So it's this interesting way that Sophie has of kind of taking advantage of the people she's playing with for what they bring to the table. And she knew, like, this is wrong. Like, we're standing here, Coach is praying, this is wrong. And to then use that to her benefit, it's so great when you can be part of a thing, but then separate yourself from it and make everybody look at someone else like, oh, Coach is such a bad person. And not one person said, well, Sophie, but you did the same thing, because that's not how Sophie was playing her game. So it was such an incredible thing to watch.
All right. We'll move into Appendix A, which is about the rest of the tribe keeping their end goals in mind when voting. And of course, it says to vote out the weak, then the strong, then the weak, then the strong. And of course, the new version, the checklist version of the shirt and the mug have that on there. So now, one thing I want to note is that Sophie understood the concept here. I can't say that she had heard the concept or read the concept before going out there, but she understood it, because in episode 4, Jeff Probst asked her about strength, and she explained how strength can mean different things in different situations. And the final three, they all followed this rule. In the beginning of the game, they voted out those they saw as weaker, who hurt their chances and challenges, and, of course, who weren't part of their group of five or six. At the merge, they voted off those who were not part of their alliance, starting with the strongest opposition. And when those people were gone, they took out the unallied weaker stragglers, continuing with Cochran and Edna. And then, of course, they went on with those who were stronger threats to win, like Brandon and Rick, and of course, Ozzy again. We talked about how Albert wanted to deviate from the plan, but Sophie kept them on track. She knew weak, strong, weak, strong. That's it.
The look on your face, there was something else coming. No, No, I do think she definitely recognized what was going to be beneficial for her group. And you saw that throughout the entire season. And like I said earlier, this season certainly had the possibility of being incredibly boring because of this methodical practice that was being employed by Sophie and Coach and Albert. I mean, it's and also even the other tribe as well. But it ended up working and it still became a rather dynamic season to watch. Again, because of those personalities. But you got to give credit to Sophie for that good read that she's able to make on people and make determinations about people. And also, Sophie is not someone that you would look at and necessarily feel like she is not going to be a strong player or she is going to be a strong player. She's difficult to read herself. And so I think that to her credit, she was able to kind of hide her potential and the things that she was bringing to the table. Like, I thought it was great even at the beginning of the game when everyone was kind of introducing themselves. She didn't say she was in med school. She said that she had studied
economics,
Russian. And
which is a weird pre-med major.
Very weird. And I had to go back and check because I'm like, wait a second. She was in med school, wasn't she? And she was, but that was what she had actually studied. And so right there, she's making herself a little less of that, you know, threatening, strong player that people need to be concerned with. And so she just across the board understood this, not only about other people, but herself as well.
All right. Well, now we get to the long awaited Appendix B, which covers the jury phase and final tribal council. And this was where everything came to a head for our three finalists. We've been hinting at it, mentioning it throughout the podcast, but what happened here sealed the deal for Sophie, both because of her good performance and also because of the terrible performances of Coach and Albert. Sophie primed the jury ahead of time for her arguments. We mentioned this, you know, that Albert was a sleaze and Coach was a figurehead. And she said that while we didn't see much of it on TV, during the final tribal council, she threw Albert on under the bus for that reason. And the two of them teamed up to do the same to Coach. And, you know, that was definitely helpful. But she went further. In her post-game interview, I asked if she thought that she changed the juror's mind. And she replied, "I think I won the game in the last two tribal councils. They were calling me a pretentious brat. As little as I was thinking about it at the time, I think my mental breakdown showed that I wasn't as big a bitch as they thought. It humanized me."
Mm-hmm. Yes. And this is something that we saw, and I can't remember what season we saw it in, but yes, Sarah Lucina did this in Winners at War, where she had that moment, the tribal council before the final tribal council, where she was able to express her concerns about women playing Survivor and their ability to form alliances and how they're perceived. And it was so interesting to see someone in that moment take a stand like that when it's not the final tribal, but you're being allowed to voice your opinion and really allow the jury to see another side of you and consider things about your game. Right. Sophie did the same thing. And it was such a smart move, even though at the time she thought, oh God, I just cried and they're not going to want some whiny crying person as their winner. But then in retrospect, she realized, no, that really did help me because it softened her personality to those individuals that were a little turned off by it. So it worked exceptionally well for her in the end game by having that moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And then as good a job as she did, Coach and Albert did the opposite. Sophie told me, and this is a pretty long quote here. "Had Coach said, 'Listen, that was all bullshit. I manipulated you. I used religion to manipulate you. And I'm here and I was a mastermind.' If he had said that, he would have won. But because he tried to defend himself and insist he was still honest in this BS, that lost him the game. All the people in the jury, they knew the rules. Mm-hmm. If I'm in the jury, I'm not voting for the best morals. That's like Survivor Season 2. In Final Tribal Council, they wanted the truth. Neither Albert nor Coach could give them that. Albert tries to weasel his way around everything, and Coach has all his honor and loyalty. All you had to do was say, 'Yes, I backstabbed you, and I'd do it again.' I think Final Tribal Council was really important to me."
No, it definitely was. And I think if I can use my season as something that I saw directly, the same exact thing happened in my final tribal, was we had Ken, who was very much the loyal individual and was constantly preaching loyalty and talking about being loyal to those that were loyal to him. It was very important to his game. And then we saw what he did to Dave, and all of us were a little bit baffled by it. We understood because, you know, David was going to win if he was sitting there, but he needed to justify that. And I tried, I asked him a question about it to try to get him to own it. Like, I actually planned on doing that. That was my strategy. That was my game the entire time. Own it. And then the respect from all of us. Oh, wait, that was, he knew what he was doing. Like, that was a planned thing. Has a much different, I think, reaction or response from those that are hearing it, as opposed to continuing that. No, that's not what I did. I was not behaving that way. And I didn't do that. But everyone knows what you did. They can see it. So you have to own it. You have to own your moves. And I do think that Coach did very poorly in that regard when really being provided opportunities to own his game.
Yeah, and several jurors, you know, backed that up exactly. Brandon said, I would have voted for Coach. All he had to do was say, I'm sorry for what I did. It was always beating around the bush, and I don't respect that. I do respect him as a person, but as far as the game, he did me dirty and suffered the consequences. Ozzy said, Coach let me down in that final tribal council. I tried to lob him softballs. I beat Albert up and beat Sophie up. I wanted Coach to be honest with himself and all of us, and that he didn't play an honest game. He should have owned up to the fact that he played a great game and didn't play honestly. I just wanted to hear him say, sorry, I had to manipulate you to get where I am. The honesty and integrity only went so far. That's all I wanted him to say. Honesty and integrity is how he wanted to play the game, but it's not the way he played the game. He needed to be honest with himself about that.
Yes,
but
100%.
Coach didn't agree with this. And as is often the case with Coach, he seemed to be in a different world. He said in his interview, the jury, I think they didn't want to hear anything. I tried to talk about the times I did make a mistake, which was pretty few and far between. I entered into contracts with people and they broke those contracts, and I felt I could get out of those. Ozzy lied to me, so there was no chance in hell I was going to let him get to the end with us. I told Brandon to his face, if you give up immunity, you're going home. I prayed and said, I want to do the right thing. It was sincere. I'm at peace with it. I'm a pastor, and I don't think I did anything subversive or hypocritical in my walk with God. So basically, you know what he did there? He said, you know, in that quote, I entered into contracts with people and they broke those contracts. He was trying to use loopholes. Like, can you imagine trying to explain loopholes to a jury on Survivor? Maybe an actual jury. You know, maybe an actual jury, like if you're a defense attorney and the law says he had to be holding the gun to be charged with this, and there's no proof he ever held the gun.
Yeah.
Well, maybe there's a loophole and you can say, okay, no, you can't explain, no, you broke the contract first. Yeah.
Yeah. And he did try to do that with Ozzy. And I don't know if it was even before, even before Final Tribal Council, he was trying to justify it that, because Ozzy's like, well, you promised me that you were going to take me to the end. And then he's like, well, but you broke the promise first. And it almost feels childish. And I don't think that by pointing out someone else's issue like that, even if that's what happened, even if that's the way that Coach really felt about it, that he feels like that contract was broken, he has to understand how is that going to sound to the people that are hearing that and that are determining whether or not he should win $1 million. If there is one thing that juries want to hear when they are deciding who's going to win $1 million, is they want people to own what they did. And Coach just wouldn't own it. And even if it hurts, even if it feels wrong because you are a pastor and these aren't your actual beliefs, that's what you did. And so you still have to own it regardless of how it conflicts with your beliefs. If you can't say it, then no one is going to reward
that. Now, Coach claimed in his interview, and this, again, goes more to blaming others instead of himself, that he wished it would have been fairer in terms of people not already making up their minds, despite what Ozzy told me about coming in with an open mind. Coach said, I think I overcame a lot. I'm getting all choked up with Coach here. You know, it's very.
I do think Coach is. Yeah. I really enjoy Coach. So this is not a Coach bashing
like
session.
It only sounds like exactly like one.
No,
but yeah.
I love
Coach
you,
said,
Coach.
I think I overcame a lot. And as a returning player, I would have voted for Ozzie even if I didn't like him. But he's a whiny little bitch. He's going to be a waiter 10 years from now. I don't think Sophie Albert or I will be that. Now, so that was about 10 years ago. I forgot to check up and see what Ozzie is doing now.
You haven't checked up on Ozzie? Maybe
you have
to
do with OnlyFans.
It does. I'll give him a little plug right now. If anyone goes to his Twitter, you'll see Ozzie in a whole new light. So
remember that's how Ozzie started before Survivor.
And yes, I had forgotten about that. But now he is putting it out there for the world on his Twitter page. And then if you want to pay, you get a little extra. But he's really putting it out there.
He's not a waiter.
Twitter page. He's not a waiter.
But according to Coach, he was a whiny little bitch.
I know. And listen, I can understand what Coach is saying about that separation. Like, I would have voted for him even if he's a whiny little bitch. I'm still going to vote for him because of his gameplay. Like, okay. But the problem that Coach runs into here is what we already talked about, is he took it to a much different level. It's one thing to be kind of not nice to people. If you're Ozzie, you know, being a little more aggressive with how you're speaking to people, putting people down, that's different than utilizing a belief system to garner favor and to have someone like really become so loyal to you that they are willing to blow up their own game for you. They are willing to lay it down and die because you have the same beliefs that I do. And because it's interesting, because I think it allows you to connect with someone on a different level, where Brandon thought he understood Coach because Coach had the same beliefs that he did. And so I think it allowed Brandon to feel more connected to Coach. And this is a game where you want to feel a connection with someone. You want to feel like you can truly trust them. And the one thing that you never have is, do I truly, really know this person? And then you throw religious beliefs into it and Christianity, and then all of a sudden you've got this connection. And Brandon is thinking, well, if this guy is really like me and is, you know, believes in God the same way I do, well, then I know that I can be loyal to him and he will be loyal to me. So it changes it. It completely changes it. And so while I can respect Coach for his belief system and what he represents and wanting to be that individual, the way that it was then put into this game put him in such a bad place because it was so against that particular system. And unfortunately, he really just needed to say, hey, listen, yeah, I am a pastor and I know how to make people follow me. And I got you all to follow me.
Yeah.
And this
you
is
were
how
my
I did.
Flock. And I turned and I sheared y'all.
Yes.
Yeah. Now,
right.
You know, that was Coach. Now, as for Albert, I don't think he had much of a shot by the time final tribal council rolled around. Like Coach, he said most of the jurors had their minds made up. And I do think the decision really came down to Sophie versus Coach. But he didn't do himself any favors, and he shot himself in the foot multiple times in final tribal council. He couldn't answer questions in a simple and straightforward way, even when the jurors told him to. It's like, yes or no question. Well, I want to. Yes or no question. Well, I want, you know, answer this question without giving a compliment. That's a very good question. And the whole jury just busts out laughing, you know.
That was so funny. That was incredible when he did that. Because he specifically said, if you compliment Coach or Sophie, I'm not even going to consider it. And then he compliments Jim. That was great.
Now, in his post-game interview, he was asked if he realized that he didn't come across as sincere and genuine. And rather than accept responsibility, much like Coach, he blamed the jury system, saying if each juror had to sit by themselves and not gossip with one another, and then he just kind of trailed off. And then he said, it's peculiar when somebody like Whitney says, Albert's a nice guy. And then 2 weeks later, she opens with, Albert, you're sleazy. How do we get there? it's somebody poisoning the well, whether Ozzy or a bitter jury. Again, pointing the finger at Ozzy. The day Dawn and Whitney left the game, I was like, listen, we don't have the numbers. I'm sorry. They knew they were going home that night. They said, thank you so much. You're the only person playing the game. If you make it to the end, we're voting for you. How does that go? How does it go from that to calling me sleazy and not voting for me? Something happened in that Ponderosa scenario that altered the way it played out. Okay, maybe. And I agree, the jury gets together and they talk and they swap stories. But part of that is people passing along information. So, yes, you had fooled maybe Whitney and Dawn up till that point. Then more people come out and they talk and they realize, well, crap, Albert fooled me.
Well, juries have to make a decision for $1 million. And it's not a decision that is going to be made by one of those people. It's going to be made by a group, a consensus, and majority rules. And so those conversations, while they can be detrimental to people's games, it can also be incredibly beneficial to the jury because it's a huge decision. And if there's any question about a particular person's gameplay, you are going to talk to people at Ponderosa. And if you find out, well, Albert told me this and Albert promised me that. And then, oh, he said the same thing to this person over here. And he said the same thing to that person over there. And then maybe that used car salesman idea starts coming, you know, to the surface. And you really start realizing he was just working all of us, which it can be a good thing to try to work the jury if you are good about how you work the jury. And he just ended up not being good at it. And I do think that those conversations at Ponderosa probably did not benefit his game because people came in with information they might not have had when they
You know, much like Coach, he also took shots at Ozzy in his interview. He said if Ozzy didn't play so horribly, he might have had a better chance if he doesn't play an awful social game. He might have had an opportunity to stake a claim. And so, you know, based on this, and I kind of hinted at it, it looks like Coach and Albert blame Ozzy for turning the jury against them, while Ozzy claims to have come in with an open mind. I mean, I suppose it's possible that both could be true and that Ozzy could have talked to the other jurors about the need for Coach and Albert to come clean. And when they didn't, that helped lead to the result we saw. But Ozzy wasn't a big fan of Sophie either.
Yeah. Yeah. I did actually stumble upon a YouTube video that was South Pacific in 60 seconds. And it was funny. It was the final try. I need to add. It was the final tribal council in 60 seconds. And when Ozzy got up to ask his question, all of the dirt, like there was bubbles over everyone's head, like, we love you, Ozzy, have my baby, take my virginity. And it was like all of these things. And then everyone else was just getting, you know, pulled and ripped apart and, you know, it stripped into pieces. But it was quite hysterical. So I do think there was some serious Ozzy love that was going on.
Not Coach and
Albert. That entire season.
I, being a fair journalist, not at all wanting to start fights or anything, just being a fair journalist. After Coach and Albert said those things, I reached out to CBS at the time and I asked for a follow-up interview so Ozzy could respond. And CBS said, sure. And Ozzy said, if Albert really wants to talk strategy, he should look in the mirror first. I won't say what he asked of me after I lost that final challenge, but needless to say, it was disgraceful. Someone who does not receive one single vote has horrible strategy. Nuff said. I don't know what it was that he asked him after that, but yeah, I'd like to know more. But then he continued, Benjamin Wade, I feel sorry for you. I am sorry I cost you the $1 million. It is all my fault. I fed your Kool-Aid right back to your loyal followers, but alas, it was rancid. I am not going to take the low road by insulting him. I just feel total pity. Ben, you are two-faced, and when I hear these things, I just feel sad for you.
Wow.
Yes, I know. Ben. I noticed that part where he called him Benjamin and Ben in that response. But, you know, I mean, Coach called him a whiny little bitch. So, you know.
I know. There definitely seems to be. Well, and it's funny because was it Cochran that called Ozzy a little bitch during the. I think he said it, too. And I was like, oh, I thought it was really quite funny that because it was when he was Ozzy was having his like meltdown. Yeah. And I think he called him, I want to say it was like a stupid little bitch. I was quite taken aback because I was like, Cochran really just said that. But he did. I even wrote it down. But I
well, it is about time to wrap things up. So what are your final thoughts?
Honestly, I walked into this rewatch kind of hesitant and not really excited about it because I remember it being a dark season. And I do remember it having some uncomfortableness to it, but I wasn't really sure how much it was. It had been a while since I had seen it. So rewatching it, I realized quite quickly why there is such a response to this particular season, because there is so many religious overtones and religion became such a large component to this game. And Sophie actually, in a lot of her exit press, said we didn't even see all of it. There was a lot more religion that we didn't even see. So that is a little disconcerting, because how much could they not have included if that was how much we saw? But regardless, Sophie, I think, was phenomenal at taking the circumstances in which she was placed and really playing to every aspect of it. She realized very quickly who she was going to have on her tribe and how those people were going to present themselves. I think her knowledge of Coach certainly helped her. She's a Survivor fan, so she knew what she was getting with Coach. And so I think having him on her tribe, she immediately knew how to manipulate him in order to then manipulate the tribe. So her read on the people that she was playing the game with is so incredibly good, and something that you don't see very often, which is why I think she was able to be kind of the quiet winner and not be the coach of the season and really not feel like this was Sophie's season. You do the rewatch and it doesn't feel like this is all about Sophie. It feels like this is all about Coach.
She had very few, relatively, you know, speaking, she had very few like confessionals.
Right. So you don't feel like it's her season, but I do think that she was able to take everything that she was given and really turn into that center component of that alliance that was created and really utilize everything to her benefit. So overall, I think Sophie is, yes, a quiet winner, but probably one of the better ones that we've seen, because she was so good at taking what was presented to her and just thriving and really using it all to her benefit. And then really probably one of the best, I think, tribal council performances that we've seen in that final tribal, when everyone was just ripping them to shreds and she was really able to use that to her benefit as well. And still come out looking very clean in comparison to the people that she was sitting next to. So overall, kudos to Sophie for just an impeccable win. I mean, really great. Who cares about her lack of edit? I mean, she walked with $1 million. So I think I would rather have $1 million than the beautiful shots on the beach and the crazy, all of the other stuff that we saw from Ozzy and Coach. She got the check. So good for
her. Looking back to when we discussed why Fabio won, it was clear that the way the two other finalists had acted was the major contributing factor. That's not the case here. As Albert was right when he said in his post-game interview, you don't have many seasons where the three players who played the best game get to the end. We played a head and shoulders better game than anybody else. But those two are certainly far from blameless for their own losses. Sophie said in her interview, I think what got me the win was playing the game every day. And while a pagonging is not necessarily the most exciting thing to watch on TV, as we talked about, it can often be a smart way to play. And keeping everybody together and in their place for that long a time takes a lot of work, especially while she was fighting Albert's urge to make big moves and Coach's urge to be Coach and Brandon's urge to be Brandon. You know, she saw the framework she had to work in and she used it to her advantage. Yes, Coach preached loyalty, honesty, and integrity, and then went against all three. Yes, Albert tried to butter up the jurors and ended up looking more oily and slippery than buttery. But Sophie saw that and used it against them. She identified the most controllable players and she controlled them. She made multiple alliances and only turned on people when it was eventually necessary. She saw what was happening around her and knew what would likely happen at the end, telling me that Coach advertised that he was supposedly going to play with honor and integrity, but then still had to make game moves, where she made those moves without holding herself above anybody else on a morality level. She out-schemed them all, and she did it in a way that, unlike Coach, would not come back to haunt her. If we believe what many of the post-game interviews with jurors are telling us, Coach and even Albert had a chance to win if they had just come clean and been honest in the final tribal council. As I mentioned earlier, I'm doubtful that about Albert. But at least for Coach, jurors said they wanted him to admit what he had done, and he wouldn't do it. When Ozzie returned to the game, Coach was so pleased with himself and all the deals he had that he said, "It's my game to lose." It was, and he did. Of course, he also said on the show, "I'm sick of people coming out here and acting like they're holier than thou." Truer words were never spoken, but it was incredibly ironic that Coach, of all people, was the one who said it. Most of the jury was sick of him being holier than thou, and they were not willing to reward such behavior. There have been many previous discussions about, and this is going to seem like a leap, so just hold on a second here, about why it's more difficult for an older woman to win in the end, because she often takes on the mom archetype and then gets blamed for stabbing people in the back. While Sophie compared Coach to a young girl in her final tribal council speech, I'm going to say he instead fell into the older woman category. But he went even further, because most of the people who fall into that mom archetype don't purposely base their games off of honesty. It's just assumed by the other players. "Oh, she's like the mom. She won't stab me in the back. Oh, she stabbed me in the back. That's horrible." As we've said, Coach claimed to base his whole game off of honesty, loyalty, and integrity, when in reality, he was just another Survivor player. If you make a big show supposedly playing with honor when you're not, it's going to come back to bite you more than if you just play the game. Most of what we saw on TV focused on Coach, like, you know, we discussed, which isn't surprising, given his huge personality. Sophie stayed quiet and in the background, not playing as much of a social game, but having her fingers in everything that went on. A fair number of viewers at the time that this originally aired were surprised and even upset to see Sophie win. But I think the entirety of the information that we saw and have presented here shows that it was well-deserved. Sophie played the best overall strategic game. She could have improved a little from the social aspect, but she ended up using that to her advantage. Most importantly, she knew how to deal with the jury, while Coach completely failed in that regard, and Albert never really had a chance. And that is why Sophie won.
Very good.
So,
yeah, that ended up being much more enjoyable of a rewatch.
Yes, and it helped, I got to say, because I think I was tweeting around the time. I'm like, "Oh, God, I'm going to have to slog through the post-merge here. And, you know, I know it's a pagonging." I forgot that they did two double episodes in a row to just shoot through that. And that helped so much.
Yeah.
It's like, let's just blow through these obvious ones and move on. So.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, we didn't even really talk about this whole, like, Redemption Island component.
That's because it you know, I mean, it kept Ozzy there. Ozzy came back. Ozzy was voted out. You know, I mean, it's,
right. Yeah. Ozzy was feeding them. So, he was catching fish.
So, happily, Redemption Island didn't end up playing a role, because it's, you know, kind of an early version of that terrible Edge of Extinction. So.
I know.
I mean. Done. At least it, well, I was going to say, at least it didn't have the jury aspect, but he was feeding the jurors and sending them on their ways. So
he was.
Anyway, as we begin to close up shop on this podcast a little bit, let me remind everyone that the rules we just discussed are now available on a poster, and a t-shirt, and a mug. So for the shirts or mug, go to robhasawebsite.com or robhasapodcast.com. Click on the merch link, browse through the designs. RHAP has a ton of designs now. So You know, you just have to look at them all, buy one of everything, but especially ours. Perfect. And then for the poster, go to tinyurl.com/DavidRulesPoster2. I also want to encourage people to check out the RHAP patron program at robhasawebsite.com/patron. We're a few days away from the beginning of a new month. So if you want to join, you should wait until the beginning of April, because the way Patreon works, if you joined like today, you would be charged for March and then charged for April, even though there might only be a couple days left in March. But once you do join, you'll see that the RHAP patron program has so many different ways to have fun and interact. There's patron family feud, patron mafia. Literally, while we are recording this, there is a patron Brant Steele simulation going on. There's a patron only follow up podcast for each Survivor season in the countdown. And Rob still has the monthly patron call in shows and a weekly Q&A show with Nicole. And I'm just going to, I feel like one of those commercials, but wait, there's more. Rob isn't talking directly to everyone, I guess when he's sleeping, there are the Facebook groups to keep you occupied with a great community of people, including both of us, where you could talk about Survivor, Big Brother, life in general. I mentioned earlier there was already a debate about Cochran's move going on in the patron Facebook group, and there's tons of stuff there. So remember to go to robhasawebsite.com/patron, and once you get to the Facebook groups, make sure to say hello.
Please do. And also, you should say hi to us on Twitter. I am at JessicaLewis89, and he is at David Bloomberg. Oh, you almost backwards. Remember? And you should certainly follow
us. Did you notice mine magically changed while we were podcasting? Story.
I did. Well, I was just looking at it.
No, it was magic. I just waved
my hand. So kudos to you. It was magic.
Yes.
It's a higher power. That's what it was. It's definitely a higher power. So, yes, you should definitely follow us both at JessicaLewis89, at David Bloomberg. And once Survivor comes back, it's filming again. Yay!
And Jeff Probst has hair as long as yours.
We live tweet during the episodes. What is up with his hair, right? I was like, damn, Jeff. But, he's still Jeff Probst, so he can do what he wants. Absolutely. But, yes, so that is filming. So we will definitely be live tweeting and obviously being doing the podcast when that starts again. So follow us both, and definitely reach out to us if you have any questions about.
Now, also, and this is new, this is a new part of our spiel here. For those of you with iPhones or iPads, there is a newer social media outlet that you may have heard about, Clubhouse. Jessica is waiting for them to open up to Android users, which they're saying will be in a couple months. But in the meantime, you could find me on there as at David Bloomberg. In addition to that, there's an RHAP club there. There's very often people in there talking, chatting, whether about RHAP stuff or about just life in general. I also have invitations I can give out. So if you need one, hit me up on social media.
Look at that. You can invite people.
That's right.
You have a little club. I love it.
I hope so. I'm looking forward to it. On Clubhouse, you can't do hashtags. On Twitter, you can. And of course, the hashtag for this podcast is WhySophieWon. And there's the hashtag for the podcast overall, YXLoss. I think people have mostly stopped using hashtags for podcasts, but we're going to keep doing it because we're Gen X and we keep doing things long after the younger people. So,
right. Exactly. My daughter was explaining to me the other day. She's like, you don't need hashtags anymore. It just goes by the words that you use. You can just search it. Oh, I'm so old.
Yeah, but your daughter also said Clubhouse isn't cool. So, we're going to ignore her. So
she did.
That's probably because she doesn't have an iPhone.
She definitely said it wasn't cool.
She does?
She does have an iPhone. I am the one holdout in my entire family. My kids are like, Mom, why do you have Android? And I'm not going to start an Android
war
iPhone debate right now. But I think it's hysterical that like I like my phones. I have two and I like them both. So I'm not getting an iPhone. I'm a holdout. Yes. But hopefully
you're over there with your two phones.
I can join Clubhouse with my
both of these. So both of these
do
are
I get
iPhone.
To thank people. I know.
Well, hold on. Let me just say, make sure everyone is subscribed to the RHAP Survivor Podcasts at robhaspodcast.com/survivor or on your favorite podcatcher. We are also on the reality TV Rehap-Ups feed, so you should subscribe to that. In both places, you'll find a wide variety of great content, including, of course, the Survivor Season Countdown.
Mm-hmm. And now I would like to thank those that help pull off this incredible experience that you get to have, either audio, video, however you end up listening to Why Blank Lost.
You've got three hours to kill.
Why not? Scott St. Pierre, thank you so much for all of the editing that you do. We truly appreciate the hard work and dedication that you provide to not only us, but all of RHAP. And also thank you to Will from America for the incredible song that you get to hear before the podcast. And it's super duper catchy, so you should definitely check it out. So thank you, Will, for creating that for us. So thank you, David, for another incredible opportunity to hang out and chat and talk about Sophie some other people.
And thank you, Jessica, for joining me once again to talk Survivor. Although we had a bit of a gap since our prior podcast, I'm expecting things to pick up as we continue moving up the rankings for each season. So with that in mind, I can't say exactly when we'll see you, but it won't be as big a gap. I'm thinking just, a couple few weeks probably. And with that, we'll see you then. Bye.
Bye.
You lost Survivor and you're feeling down. David and Jessica will turn it around. They'll break down the rules and they'll show you how. You played yourself and got voted out. This is why Blank lost. And this is why Blank lost. Oh, baby, this is why Blank lost.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18+.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.